I'm Jennifer Smola, reporter with the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us. I recently had the opportunity, along with our dispatch photographer, Courtney Hergesheimer, to spend a lot of time with Sarah Marino. She's a young woman from Delaware who, about a year and a half ago, attempted suicide. She had and continues to have some very serious injuries, but she survived, and we were very fortunate and grateful to Sarah and her family to let us in on some of her personal journey since then, including the strong support system she's developed around her since her attempt and her outlook now on mental health and life in general. And we know Sarah's story is one that fits into a larger one unfolding here in Ohio and nationwide. We're seeing an increasing anxiety and depression among young people. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people, both young adults and even younger children. So there's a lot to unpack here. And joining me to do that today is Dr. Ackerman, Suicide Prevention Coordinator at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Dr. Ackerman, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
Before we get started, I just want to lead off, first of all, with the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline for anyone who may need it. That number is 1-800-273-8255. So, Dr. Ackerman, maybe we can just start with sort of the stats here. What are the trends right now in terms of suicide and mental health concerns among young people? And do we have many answers as to why we're seeing what we're seeing right now?
Well, we certainly continue to see a rise in mental health concerns, specifically around anxiety and depression. We see rates of suicide attempts and suicides among young people increasing. We're learning more each day about the factors that contribute to that, but we continue to need to learn a lot about the underlying causal factors. So a lot of what we have right now is information about the things that are related or the correlates to that, so what are associated. But we really do understand that this is more than just identifying kids who are at risk. It is something that there does seem to be a true increase in these rates of anxiety, depression, and suicide. And it also, I would say, what we're seeing both at the hospital and in the community is that symptoms are more severe and they're occurring at younger ages. So we really need to make sure that we are identifying and talking about this in a way that's healthy early on in a young person's life. And that extends from really school-age kids all the way through college.
And I cover higher education, so that has been a part of my coverage in terms of what is happening at the collegiate level. Students at Ohio State and other universities across the country have called for more counselors, more resources for mental health. I know from a younger children's level, your employer, Nationwide Children's, has embarked on a pretty big campaign raising awareness about mental health in children. What other efforts are underway that you've seen to try to address this, whether it's from that starting at a young age and even up into the college level and among kind of teenagers and the young adult age?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point that when you're dealing even with the college age population and young adults, it really, mental health begins well before that. So we know that about 50% of mental health disorders begin by the age of 14. That's one of the reasons why Nationwide Children's Hospital initiated the On Our Sleeves campaign. It's really to make sure that we are educating families and communities that this starts early and you've got an opportunity to teach kids skills and awareness that will contribute to their health in young adulthood and throughout that. So one of the things that we do, and we spend a lot of time, is working with folks who work with kids. So we work in schools and community settings and faith-based organizations, with camp providers, to make sure that we're informing the adults of what to look for, what are the warning signs of suicide, and then how they can respond in a really helpful, compassionate way. But that really does send a sense of urgency that this is a leading cause of distress and death, and we want to make sure that they are in a position where they are equipped with the knowledge of how to respond.
Mm-hmm. And what improvements can still be made out there? I mean, we're talking about it a little bit more now than we used to, but maybe specifically among the age group that Sarah, the woman we reported on, falls into, kind of that late teens, early 20s, young adult, college, traditional age college student. What kind of improvements maybe are still to be made in that realm, if you can speak to that?
Really, there's so much to be done. I'm glad you're talking about this topic. I'm glad Sarah was brave enough to be able to share her experiences, because we know that the more the door is opened for people to share stories of struggle, but also messages that things can get better, things will get better if you access the resources that are available, and that it isn't all rainbows and unicorns. It can be a chronic health journey when you're talking about depression and suicide, but that we have to break down these doors to be able to talk about it. You can't start to intervene and make a difference if people still are thinking that mental health issues aren't real, or because you can't see it, it's not an actual phenomenon. We need people to understand that depression, for example, is identified by the World Health Organization as a leading cause of global burden, and that it's really something that we can address. We need to do that by making sure there's enough funding for research. We need to make sure that this is universal education that starts early in our schools. People may be surprised to know that middle school and even elementary school classrooms are asking for this. They really want to know how can we embed this into our system. So that's a lot of what we try to do. But there has to be policy. There has to be an understanding of what are the programs that work. So I'm a very skeptical person by nature. Mm-hmm. We can't afford to put our resources, our limited resources, into programs and efforts that don't work. And we know that talking about it is a good first step. But if you don't follow this up with things like screening, things like educating the community, things like dialogues that bring people to the table that can change the way our systems work for people. These are all things that have to happen. The laws that are part of making sure that both schools and workplaces and colleges have these opportunities. We do know we're not going to treat it away. So I think there is a misconception that if we hire enough counselors, this problem will go away. Mm. We definitely need to take a public health approach where we're making sure that we're involving the community and key stakeholders and really getting everyone involved, because unfortunately, even if we did have all the counselors, there's still so much stigma underlying this that not everyone will know what to look for and how to access help and be willing to. So we need to share those messages that it's okay to look for help, and that's going to take a big community effort.
And you mentioned there kind of the funding for research into learning more about this problem and understanding it. And I know when we talked for this story, you'd mentioned that it's kind of the funding and research is almost mismatched to the size of the problem, and that there's definitely room for improvement in terms of the research and the funding to support that good research. So can you talk about that a little bit? How do we address that? How do we get that?
Yeah, it is really an odd mismatch. And I think that goes to the stigma. It's the second leading cause of death among 10 to 34-year-olds. It's the 10th leading cause of death overall for all people. But if you look at where that falls with where the federal funding has been or even local funding, it's way, way down the list. I don't have that on me right now, but things like dietary supplements, for example, are higher funded than suicide. Or if you look at other kind of rare diseases or things like that, or other medical causes or quote-unquote medical causes, because we know this is a health issue no matter how you slice it. But so if you look at just that equity that we're talking about, it's just not there. And I think you are seeing a national dialogue around suicide. You are seeing celebrities come out and talk about it. You are seeing this breaking down of the stigma, which I think is a great first step. But ultimately, you have to have things like insurance companies really understanding that parity, really funding treatment, and you have to have policymakers making sure that those programs are in place. It's all well and good to talk about mental health being very important, but if you then, the systems that support individuals who are at highest risk are undermined, then it's a real struggle for individuals who are at highest risk.
Mm-hmm. And for those who may be feeling depressed or anxious or suicidal, or for a person who maybe suspects a loved one might be going through those things, what can you tell people about maybe what to do or how to help?
I think there's two pieces to that. We have a lot of really effective crisis resources out there. The main ones that come to mind nationally are the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TALK. And then the other one is a crisis text line, which you can, within Ohio, you would text For Hope to 741-741. You can really text in anything and a person will get to you 24/7. Locally, there are certainly crisis options in both NetCare Access and our youth psychiatric crisis line for Franklin County at Children's Hospital. So there are folks that you want to be able to know that in a crisis, I've got a plan, and that involves understanding what it is that is the most upsetting thing possible for you. You understand where you can turn, what you can do to immediately discharge some of that intense distress that you might be feeling. People you can go to, understand that crisis won't last forever typically, that it's a very intense period of time. So if you can build that bridge from intense crisis to safety by using some of these crisis resources, using some of the people who you're willing to trust and share your personal information with and get through that time, that can be really helpful. And then I think we just want to be able to ensure that people know that there is treatment out there that works. There are effective strategies that are actually suicide specific at this point. I think in the past, people thought, oh, just treat the depression, just treat the anxiety, mm-hmm. the suicidal thoughts or behaviors will go away. And that's not necessarily what the evidence say. So we have some nice treatments either established or in development development, including dialectical behavioral therapy, or people call it DBT. There's something called CAMS, or the Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality. Those are some treatments, including cognitive behavioral therapy, that are starting to show really good evidence that if you address the suicide piece of what a person's experiencing, that can actually be more effective in keeping them safe. Hmm. And then there's certainly also underlying issues that a person would want to deal with. So just knowing that there are treatments that work, there are resources that work with really compassionate people on the other side of the phone or the computer that can be helpful and that are well trained, and they don't need to know your entire life story to be mm-hmm. helpful and to be listening, and to make sure that the people on the other end of those situations know that being present, listening in a really calm, curious manner, and not trying to fix everything right away or not judging the person is one of the most powerful interventions we have. So in that regard, we don't need a workforce of 10 million therapists. We need a safety net of several billion people who know that depression exists. It's something that many people go through, but it doesn't have to be the inevitable conclusion that a person suffers for their entire life, or that suicide is something that's a common response to mental distress. I do want to leave that message too. Mm-hmm. A lot of people see these stories and they think, oh, every young person wants to kill themselves. That's not true. Mm-hmm. It is increasing, but most kids don't die by suicide, and that's a really good thing. Most, even individuals who do make a suicide attempt, 90% of them go on to live a healthy and meaningful life. So we really want to make sure people have the tools to help people get through their most difficult time. And with young people, they're kind of in that valley and they haven't seen the other side, that it can get better. So we have to help build that bridge, and we have to give them the tools and resources to do that.
And you mentioned that safety net of, you know, billions of people. I presume that implies that we all can play a role in just building each other up.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely, that's part of the mission of our center and our strong belief that we all have a role in preventing suicide. And it's not if you will encounter either within your own experience or with your loved ones. We know that this is something you will encounter in your life. So being prepared is a better option than not being able to have the conversation.
Great. Okay. Dr. Ackerman, was there anything else that we didn't touch on today that you think is important for people to know about this?
I think we just want to know that it's okay for people to talk about suicide. We don't want to censor the conversation, but doing it in a really thoughtful and compassionate way, in a way that helps people who are struggling know that there's support out there, that they're not alone, and that we can build that bridge from crisis to hope. And I think stories like this are part of how that's going to happen. So I really appreciate you taking the time to discuss this important topic.
Thanks so much. That's Dr. Ackerman with Nationwide Children's Hospital. Thanks again for being here today. I will lead off again with the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline that Dr. Ackerman mentioned. That's 1-800-273-TALK. Or 1-800-273-8255. And the crisis text line, as he mentioned, is 741-741. You can read more about Sarah's story as well as suicide prevention resources in the Dispatch and at dispatch.com. Thanks.